So maybe a first question would be, give us a state of just your tribes. Madison has just been designated in December, Truax Field, as the home of F-35A. Doctor, can you start? Give us an overview. Spring is tick season in Wisconsin, as you may have discovered if you took a walk over the Memorial Day weekend in any of our forest parks or trails. But there's a new facility that opened last year in northern Wisconsin to research and treat ticks and tick-borne illness. I want to thank two of the principals of that center for joining me for this interview. Dr. Andreas Kogelnick is director of the Tick-Borne Illness Center of Wisconsin. Aaron Beertzer is president of the Howard Young Foundation, which started the center, and the foundation is part of the Howard Young Medical Complex in Woodruff. Andreas, Aaron, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having us, Steve.
Let's do about 10 minutes overview on ticks because, well, as I said, the season, and I've just seen a few myself just going out and about. Let's overview of ticks, and then we'll come around and focus exclusively on the Center of Excellence. First of all, am I right that showing a graphic in Wisconsin, there are three types of ticks that spread disease: deer, wood, which are dog ticks, and Lone Star tick. Right now, we're concerned, and we're seeing most often the deer tick, right, Doctor?
That's right. The deer tick's the most prevalent out there. It's all over the place. The other two have been here for a while, but are slowly increasing and kind of coming up from the south.
Okay, and continuing the overview, there's a fascinating picture on the CDC website. It shows a poppy seed muffin, and it asks, can you spot all five ticks in this photo? You may have not have seen this, but we're showing it to our viewers. And it's just fascinating. I could not spot on the muffin, and then it shows where the five ticks are. So these ticks, Doctor, are almost have to look for them, or they let you know they're there?
Well, absolutely. Most patients, even those that get ill, don't actually see the tick. So if you see a tick, you know, grab it, and we're happy to look at it with you and test it in various ways. But most patients don't actually ever see the tick, and same goes for pets. So really checking those pets thoroughly. It's really easy, as you said, with the poppy seed muffin to hide that tick, especially the little nymphs, the baby ones. They're really hard to see unless you're really looking out for them.
Okay. Aaron, thanks for your patience. Now, Wisconsin ranks as one of the most at-risk states for ticks and Lyme disease and other illnesses, correct? Is that why the foundation began the center up in the Great North Woods?
Yeah, our Howard Young Foundation has always fundraised on behalf of our hospitals up here, but a former board member was actually the one who brought the idea to us, and it was mainly because everybody knew somebody who was affected by it, and there was nothing like it in the Midwest. And unfortunately, he had two friends who were currently suffering, one that actually had died and one that currently was being attempting to be treated. He just really felt there was an opportunity here to do something in the Midwest region that could impact not only the state of Wisconsin, but all over the Midwest and potentially even nationally. So to do something about it, we really went to the best. We went to the best people who had devoted their lives to treating and researching tick-borne illnesses. And they led us to Dr. Andy Kogelnick, who you're interviewing today from Open Medicine Institute.
Well, and how long ago did the foundation begin the fundraising and the vision casting? How much did it cost? When did the center open? And what's its scope now? Please, Aaron.
Yeah, we started the vision and brought this together and signed our agreement with Andy in 2018. And just in those two short years, what we had agreed to do was fund half of the startup costs. So we were putting in $3.5 million, and so was Open Medicine Institute. So every donor dollar that came into this campaign was being matched, which was fantastic. And to have a research and treatment center here, I'm proud to say that in two short years, due to the generosity of our donors, we have already reached $3.2 million. We only have about $275,000 to go.
Doctor, tell us about the Open Medicine Institute and how are you trained to specialize in tick-borne illness, please?
Yeah, so I'm an infectious disease specialist trained at Stanford and left there about 10 years ago to start the Open Medicine Institute, really as a combined research and clinical organization to kind of bring the best of biotechnology and information and science directly into the clinic and sort of accelerate that process of applying stuff. And, you know, we started looking at a lot of different chronic problems that spawn from infections. And so tick-borne illness is one area where this is hugely prevalent, where we have people who are acutely affected, but then some of those acute infections go on to develop long-term problems. And it really hasn't been studied super well. There's only a few places in the country that do it. And so we decided to dive in deep on that and really try to apply the latest in biotechnology to that, but at the same time, deliver care for patients today. And we really pulled together an amazing group of nationally recognized scientists from Columbia, with Brian Fallon and Dr. Alcott from Johns Hopkins and Dr. Spector from Duke and Sam Shore, who's in community practice in Washington, D.C., to really help round that out and really give us a view of how can we accelerate our learning and our understanding as well as the treatment of patients.
In the grand continuum of nature, let me ask us perhaps a stupid question. Is there any beneficial any benefit to ticks? Do they do us any natural or societal good, doctor? That's just I'm just curious.
People like opossums, and apparently they eat up the ticks, so it's a great food source for some of the animals out there. But there's I don't know of a whole lot of other ones, and they certainly carry a whole lot of diseases around. But they're also really, really tough to eradicate. But I'm not an entomologist, so there may be some other value that the ticks are bringing, but I haven't heard it in all my travels.
Thanks for your honest answer. The incident of tick-borne illness, has it grown? Now, looking at a map with Minnesota, Wisconsin, and then states in the Northeast, but are we seeing a dramatic increase in the number of tick-borne illness?
Yeah, well, Wisconsin's always been a bit of a hotbed, and if you look over the last 5 years, that's really only increased. And a few years back, the CDC revised its estimates nationally of tick-borne illnesses and Lyme disease in particular, and that only made the situation even that much worse up here. My guess is that we're still grossly underestimating it, and part of that problem is testing, that really the testing is way behind where we need to be. Really to understand and identify and address the problem. But yeah, Wisconsin is one of the top five hotspots in the nation.
Center
of that.
Thank you. Let's run down, before we get to the specifics on the center, let's run down of ways to reduce the risk of Lyme disease. And I'm using a list from the Wisconsin Natural Resources Magazine. Wear long sleeves and pants. Tuck your pants inside your shoes. Light-colored clothing will make it easier to spot ticks. Don't wear open-toed shoes and sandals. Use insect repellents, but not all insect repellents, right, doctor? Which ones?
Yeah, you really want the deep ones, and really coating your clothing is as important as anything in terms of just prevention and keeping the ticks away, and using pet collars too. A lot of times people don't get bitten directly. The ticks catch a ride on their pets, and then the pet hops on the bed. You know, the dog sleeps on the bed or what have you, and the tick just crawls right over. So you want to take care of your pets as well as yourselves.
And then walk down the center of mowed trails to avoid brushing. At the end of the day, inspect yourself, children, and pets. Remove attached ticks with thin-tipped tweezers by grasping them as close to the skin as possible and pulling straight up. Clean the site with rubbing alcohol or skin disinfectant. Wash and dry all clothing. Ticks can survive a wash cycle. I didn't know that. But they can't withstand 1 hour in a hot dryer? Wow.
Like the dryer at all, it's the heat that gets them off. So taking those clothes off when you come in and changing into a fresh set of clothes and throwing them right into the dryer is a great thing to do.
Check with your doctor and watch for early symptoms of Lyme disease. What about the myths that you shouldn't crush them with your hand, and do you have to set them on fire? Are those just myths?
Yeah, well, setting them on fire certainly will destroy them.
Yes.
And crushing them with your hand is actually really hard. They're pretty hardy little bugs. But definitely, we love to see the intact bug, and we have an ability to test those as well as put them into our research process. So if you're curious of what's in that tick, if you've been bitten or if it's been on your pet, we can actually test those for you and tell you what bacteria and what viruses and so forth are in there. Worst case, we can stick it in the biobank and keep it for future research.
Okay. Now, Aaron, thanks for your patience. How does the Center of Illness expand the scope of Howard Young in the Woodruff area?
Yeah, so it's an independent center, but we wanted it located right in the middle of Howard Young Medical Center because the patients that are coming to the center, especially chronic ones, have need for services that are right there in that facility, whether that be rehab, labs, the ability to have a CT scan, all of that equipment has been helped fund by donors through the Howard Young Foundation. So it's great to have them located there. Okay. They're open last September. I think what's exciting for me and some of the conversations you're having, and especially since Dr. Koganek's here, is we helped also work with OMI through our events that we have in the summers. And they have raised over 500 samples or brought in 500 samples that have been contributed by individuals just randomly attending events, a blood draw for research. And with those samples, it's amazing what you can find out. So. A hospital is key, and also the ability to do research with an area like us where it's an epidemic up here.
Epidemic. We've heard terms like that in pandemic a lot. So how many patients do you envision actually treating at the center, Aaron?
Well, I'll let Andy answer that one.
Okay. Please, doctor.
Well, we're staffing up in terms of our providers and staff, and right now we're able to see up to 20 patients a day. We have both an acute service, so if you get bitten by a tick and you want to come in and get help getting it off you, we can certainly do that, as well as obviously, you know, if you don't have the tick on you still and you want to be treated, our team will do that as well. And then we have a more chronic track of people who've been suffering for some time from tick-related problems. We see those patients as well. So we're really trying to support both ends of that and help people through what can be a very twisted diagnostic journey in some places, just because, you know, these illnesses, they mimic a lot of other things, and sometimes it's really hard to get an answer. And the tests don't always help, unfortunately.
If I do I have to be referred to the Center for Excellence, or can I just think I have a problem and show up?
Yeah, no, we take walk-ins, particularly on the acute side, but absolutely, you can self-refer to the center. We certainly work with a lot of the community docs and are open to those conversations. We've seen patients coming in from, you know, Green Bay and from Canada even, and all the way down to Chicago already, and we're starting to get some attraction from outside the region as well. But yeah, anybody can just walk in.
They can. Aaron, how is the Howard Young Foundation getting the word out about the Center of Excellence?
We have a publication that we do twice every year that goes out to about 60,000 people in the summer and 20,000 in the winter. So we've been sharing stories through that. Getting phone calls every day. I actually, just this morning, we had somebody knock on our door looking to have a tick removed. So we were able to direct them over to the center. It is a fantastic addition to the region, especially right here in the middle of Lyme Disease Awareness Month. You know, we know COVID is a priority and on top of everybody's minds, but the ticks don't care. They're coming out and people are being bitten every day. And our center is purposefully built to deal with that. And also, I would say the center is a center of hope. You know, that's something that the foundation was really passionate about. We love doing innovative things, but we want to do things that are making a difference for patients. And these patients are coming to the center with suitcases of medical materials from being attempting to be diagnosed and not being able to figure out what's going on. And having the ability to have them sit down, share their story, understand their background, and through research and treatment, be able to have a plan, be able to have the best. We've got some world-renowned people on our advisory board in this space. To have them be able to guide those complex cases, it's really historic, I feel, for what's been developed up here in the North Woods that is going to help all those that are suffering.
And viewers will certainly want to know, are these covered by insurance companies? Is this covered by Medicare and Medicaid?
Yeah, right now a fee-for-service clinic, but we're working towards getting local insurance contracts. Certainly, patients can submit their bill to their insurance company and hopefully get some reimbursement, but it's variable depending on what insurance you've got.
Okay, thank you. Doctor, getting ready for this, I noticed that Lyme disease can lead to some, well, it can be lethal, I think, as Aaron said earlier, but some of the secondary consequences, cardiac conditions and neurological conditions. So untreated, where can Lyme disease and these other types of diseases go, sir?
Well, I think one great example of that, I mean, they can go a lot of places, and that's one of the challenges that, you know, people have called Lyme disease the great imitator, along with syphilis. Is also another great imitator, so they imitate a lot of things. But one of our board members, who's a physician, was misdiagnosed for about 2 years and wound up having Lyme carditis, so it affected his heart. And he wound up actually, over the course of 8 years, having to get a heart transplant. And he's now about 2 or 3 years out from his heart transplant and doing really well. But it took quite a journey for him, as you can imagine, to go through that, get a proper diagnosis, get it treated, and now manage a whole, you know, set of sequelae from that original infection.
Well, and how has the emergence of, tragically, COVID-19 complicated the treatment of tick-borne illness? Or are you looking for different things? Is it slowing down your ability to treat some of this tick-borne illness? What impact of COVID-19, sir?
Well, it's certainly having an impact on how people move around or don't move around, and certainly whether they're able to physically get to the center to get checked out and get help with their problem. We're doing a lot of televisits, of course, and those kinds of things. But on the disease side itself, we're still learning a lot about COVID-19. We're directly involved in some of the diagnostic work here in California for COVID, but we're really just learning the impacts on the immune system. I think that's the bigger question for tick-borne illness patients, that already so many of them have disruption in their immune system because of the tick-borne disease. How does COVID, you know, change that, make it worse in many cases? And or how does it muddy up the diagnostic picture, right? That we're seeing COVID-19 being misdiagnosed all the time here too, until we get more testing out there.
How often does Lyme disease kill, doctor?
Well, thankfully, not that often, although we do certainly see, you know, Lyme meningitis cases and like the cardiac case I just mentioned. So thankfully it's less than 10%, for sure, but it definitely obviously has big impact when that happens. So we want to get ahead of those cases everywhere we can.
Okay, we're going to show a graphic now of kind of the mission statement of the center. And Aaron, these are 4 points that are on your website. So if you want to just elaborate on any of them, the Tick-Borne Illness Center of Excellence, where people who believe they may have a tick-borne illness can be effectively diagnosed and treated. Any PSs on that? Next one, where patients who have been suffering for some time from an undiagnosed illness can receive a clear plan for treatment and follow-up care. Third, where patients can participate in research to improve the ability to diagnose and treat tick-borne illnesses. That connects with other clinicians and researchers to share information and findings, a place where collaboration is the norm. That's a pretty broad mission plan, Aaron. How do you envision this growing? Because if you're this ambitious with phase one, is there a phase two and phase three contemplated?
Yeah. I think it grows through patients having a great experience. I mean, that's ultimately what this is about. We want to get the patients healthy. And when they come into the center, they're greeted in a very warm, we remodeled the space, so it's a great environment for them. They sit down, the experience is to sit down with a doctor and have a consultation or a nurse practitioner, and we wanted to have those consultations not be limited by time. So I can speak firsthand. My husband was a patient, and he had a over 1 hour visit with Dr. Kolbenek that was absolutely phenomenal, just to share everything they've experienced and gone through. I want to also highlight the growth will come from research. We wanted to have it be a place where every visit, every clinical encounter was a research encounter. And that's what's going to help every patient that comes after you. By participating in the research side of things, we can not only improve the individual's health, but improve the health of everybody who comes after. So I think those two things are what makes it unique, differentiated, and the first in the region that's doing both.
And is there a mission plan for phase two, phase three, either of you?
Well, we're certainly starting with the clinical piece, as Aaron said, and we already have several research projects underway, and we're looking at some additional research grants and funding. Definitely, I think they go hand in hand and only serve to make the other one better. As we said at the beginning, there's just so much that we don't understand around these illnesses, both, you know, on the patient and on the physician side. What we want is a place where everyone is free to ask those questions. And I think that's really phase two and three, is that we get a broader engagement with physicians, with other scientists, both regionally and nationally. And I think we're well on our way to that.
What specific research questions do you want the center to begin to answer, Doctor, over the next year or two?
Well, one of the next key things that we're diving into is the quality and the strength of diagnostic testing. Tick-borne illness testing is all over the map in terms of quality, in terms of interpretation and clinical use. And I think there are some better tools out there that haven't been as broadly applied clinically. And so we're starting to do that and look at doing a bigger comparative study on the tools that are out there so that physicians, not only in the center, but physicians elsewhere in the region and nationally, have some better markers as to how they should handle these patients, both, you know, again, making diagnoses as well as making treatment decisions for them.
Are men or women more likely to get tick-borne illness, or is it equal?
It's about equal. Some people have suggested that, but I haven't seen the data really bear it out yet, that women are more likely to become chronic. I'm not sure I totally believe that yet, but certainly, you know, the exposure risk is equal. One can argue which sex is outside more or getting into the higher risk areas. But I think really the ticks don't care, and nor do they care about demographics or anything else. They really affect everybody. And, you know, we have to really go at that with an open mind.
As someone with your experience, Doctor, how well informed and able to treat tick-borne illness is the average GP across the nation? I know that's a very broad question, but just your thoughts, please.
Well, I can say, you know, as an infectious disease specialist, I can say that, you know, we get a lot more training around infections, and I think actually a lot of the pieces that we're given are pretty limited around tick-borne illnesses. And so the average GP gets less of that, and so it's even more limited. I think, you know, we're trained to follow a certain mantra, and I think that's not enough for many of the patients that are out there. And what we really want to do in the center is bring some good data around that to resolve some of those questions, those unanswered questions for those patients, as well as for the community as a whole.
Aaron, I want to circle back to something you said. Talk to me about the fundraising. Was the goal initially $7 million? How much of that has been raised? You're still fundraising. And if someone watched this and wanted to help, how could they help?
They certainly can still help. We have about $275,000 to go towards our goal. We were fundraising half of it, so that is $3.5 million was what we were setting out to do. Mm-hmm. With anything we go above that, we're looking at doing a compassionate care fund for those who can't afford to pay. We're also looking at research opportunities to continue the conversations that you were just having earlier. How people can donate is go to howardyoungfoundation.org. And we have a donate button right there where you can choose to donate to the Tick-Borne Illness Center of Excellence. And we look forward to not only completing this campaign, but continuing to work with Andy and seeing how we can really focus on point four of the mission that we talked about earlier, which is collaboration. I think it is challenging for patients who have gone to a doctor and are told they don't have anything, go to another doctor and are told you do have something, because the testing is not strong. And what I love about the advisory panel that Andy has been able to assemble for this center is there are people who have been treating this disease in patients for over 30 years. And you take that experience, that research, that expertise, and you help start to answer some of these questions, you're not only going to influence patient outcomes, but you're going to help educate some of those practitioners who may be didn't understand this could happen, or the CDC for guidelines of what we should be doing in different situations. That really, to me, is the ultimate vision for what this can be in the future.
As our nation debates healthcare on all these different levels, Erin, is there any thought of asking for federal or state support of the Tick-Borne Illness Center?
Absolutely. I think there's always opportunities there. I think one of the challenges, obviously, I think there's challenges nationally on where those funds should go. And I think those are difficult decisions to make, but it certainly is something we've entertained and explored.
Do you envision asking the next session of the legislature and governor for some aid for the center?
Yes, and we have been in contact with those in Madison who have connected us to the right resources to be able to ask those questions. So they're actively working it for us.
And you just got a new Congress.
A lot of the public health agencies on a county by county level, as well as on the state level, and already convened a couple of meetings with different groups of them to engage in that collaborative aspect as well.
Okay, appreciate that. We're almost out of time. I want to end with a graphic on signs and symptoms of Lyme disease. It's rather detailed, so we're going to leave it up on the screen for a while. But I just want to go through them quickly. NEPS's doctor, please. Early signs and symptoms, 3 to 30 days after a tick bite, fever, chills, headache, fatigue, muscle joint aches, swollen lymph nodes, and then you have the erythema migrans rash. Talk about the rash, doctor.
Yeah, the rash can be very classic, but there's a lot of different rashes that can appear. But if you see that classic bullseye rash, that's a great sign that you've got Lyme disease. Unfortunately, there's many other tick-borne illnesses that won't have as specific a rash. But even so, you know, less than half the patients will see a rash, actually more like less than a third. So that's the other challenge, is that just because you didn't have the rash doesn't mean you don't have the disease. So it's helpful in some cases, but certainly doesn't help us across the board.
And then we're going to keep the graphic up there. Later signs and symptoms, days to months after a tick bite, severe headaches, neck stiffness, additional rashes on other areas of the body, facial palsy, arthritis with severe joint pain and swelling, intermittent pain in tendons, muscles, joints, and bones, heart palpitations or an irregular heartbeat, shooting pains, numbness or tingling in hands or feet, episodes of dizziness or shortness of breath, inflammation of the brain and spinal cord, nerve pain. Thoughts on the longer-term symptoms, doctor?
Well, I think you're rattling off a really long list of stuff, and I think that is the challenge, is that in any given patient, it's sort of mix or match. Any one of these or several of these could appear, and so how do you tease apart which ones are due to Lyme versus other things? And that is the diagnostic dilemma for most of those providers out there, and that's what we want to help with.
Oh, I really appreciate that. Okay, last question. I want your vision for the center 2 or 3 years from now. Doctor, go first. Vision cast.
We'd love to see a much broader research program supporting, you know, multiple clinicians on the ground, supporting outreach into the community docs, and really, I think, changing some of the story on a statewide level of you know, combating this epidemic.
And dream big, Erin.
Well, we would love to help fund some of those research efforts, but my vision for the center would be success stories to be able to share back, not only of patient outcomes, but also from the medical community, belief and influence in how we handle and treat what you just read is a very complex list of symptoms. And this center is helping provide that precision medicine for each individual patient, because there is no one size fits all with this disease, and there never will be.
And doctor, as we emerge from self-isolation and choose to walk in Wisconsin's beautiful forest trails and parks, your advice?
You know, do those tick checks when you come in, and really just do all the things that you mentioned earlier in trying to be safe and check your pets and your kids. We're here to help if you find something.
Okay. I want to thank Dr. Andreas Kogelnick, Director of the Tick-Borne Illness Center of Excellence, and Erin Bierzer, President of the Howard Young Foundation. Very timely interview. Everybody stay safe. Thank you very much. Thanks.
Hi, I'm John Henkes, President of Wisconsin Eye Public Affairs Network, and I'm speaking to you today to ask for your financial support. For 14 years, Wisconsin Eye has provided uninterrupted gavel to gavel, live coverage from our state capitol, the legislature, the Supreme Court, the governor's office. We're proud to continue to do that and continue through this time of crisis with important coverage. We are 100% committed to bringing these important meetings into your home or place of work. We've created online pathways that allow us to connect you live with these important events. But Wisconsin I needs your help to do so. At this time, we are facing unprecedented staffing, technical, and financial challenge. So if you rely on our coverage to stay informed on issues you care and need to know about, I ask that you consider a one-time charitable gift today to help us through this challenge. Whether you're following the DHS briefings, the Wisconsin Elections Commission, or leadership briefings from the state capitol, or any of the timely interviews conducted by our senior producer, Steve Walters, we could use your support today. If just a fraction of the thousands who value Wisconsin Eye coverage say yes with a gift of any size, it will provide a huge boost. So thank you. To donate, please text WISEYE to 44321. That's WISEYE to 44321, or visit wiseye.org/donate. wiseye.org/donate. Or you could send a check to 122 West Washington Avenue, Suite 200, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Again, thank you so much. Please be safe. Stay optimistic. We are Wisconsin.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civics broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol.